Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast.
This is Princess Molly.
Okay. I'm Kristen. So, Molly, there is a new Disney princess.
There is.
Who has debuted.
Yes. Princess and the Frog is the movie.
Yeah, The Princess and the Frog. It takes place in New Orleans, combines a little voodoo, a little jazz. But the big thing about this movie is that it is the first African-American Disney princess.
Right. I feel like it's been talked about just for months now. People are waiting to see what this black princess is going to be like. As soon as they announced it, already people started to be critical of her, saying, you know, oh, she wasn't black enough. She was too black. It was going to be in New Orleans. It's going to have all these stereotypes. Mm-hmm. People have been dissecting this long before the movie was even finished.
And Disney went to great lengths while it was making this movie to try to quell any types of discomfort people might have had with, like you said, on either side of it, making, you know, including too many stereotypes or not making her realistic enough. And for instance, they even had Oprah come in and do an advanced screening of it. I think they had people from the NAACP come in and see it because this is a really big deal. And one thing that's been really controversial, though, with it is the questionable racial identity of Tiana's love interest.
In Naveen.
Naveen, yeah. Basically, he is a lighter-skinned. Disney is saying that he's just a lighter-skinned African-American, but people are saying, no, he's totally white, and why couldn't you make him the same, you know, skin tone as Tiana, like, so there's already a lot of discussion about this movie.
And there was this New York Times article that came out in May by Brooks Barnes about all the controversy about this movie. And I really liked one quote from it from Floyd Norman, who had worked on a lot of Disney movies. And he wrote, "Overly sensitive people see racial or ethnic slights in every image. And in their zeal to sanitize and pasteurize everything, they've taken all the fun out of cartoon making." And Tiana is under all this scrutiny because people have just become convinced that whatever you show a child in a Disney film mm-hmm. is somehow going to impact them forever.
Yeah, but I do think we should know that this New York Times article also points out that the prince hails from the fictional land of Maldonia and is voiced by a Brazilian actor, which is also kind of added, I guess, further fuel to the fire. But like you said, I mean, are we being too, you know, overly sensitive? Are we, you know, putting too much value on the impact of a Disney movie on the way a child is going to view the world in the future? And specifically with this concept of the Disney princesses.
Right. And it just, you know, you can't deny that Disney princess in and of itself is a great marketing technique. What did a few years ago was they packaged 9 of the female characters who weren't even necessarily royal determined princesses, mm-hmm. you know, and just called them the princesses. And it accounts for billions of sales every year. It's the largest girls franchise on the planet.
Yeah, and it basically saved Disney's merchandising at the time. It was just plummeting. And then this guy named Andy Mooney stepped in and thought, you know what? We need to merchandise some princess stuff. And it's huge. And I can attest to that. My niece, obsessed with Disney princess stuff. I have purchased Disney princess gear for her to wear because she looks adorable in fake satin gloves. You know, call me a bad aunt, but it's kind of cute.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. You see so many nurseries that just feature all the princesses from, and wait, we should probably list all the princesses there are.
Yes.
Can you name them all off the top of your head?
The official princesses.
Do it.
No, because I'm looking at them on a piece of paper. there's Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Ariel, Belle, Jasmine, Mulan, and Pocahontas. Now, Mulan and Pocahontas don't show up on as much Disney princess stuff, but those are the official princesses. And now
Tiana.
And Tiana has been selling like gangbusters.
Yeah. And, you know, you said Mulan and Pocahontas don't show up on a lot of merchandise, and that's largely thought to be because of their outfit. It's girls want sort of a flowy dress, which is part of the reason I think Tiana has a really beautiful dress. And so they say they're just appealing to these girls who want to play dress up and look like a princess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go to Disney World, there's like a Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo boutique where they do your hair and makeup like a Disney princess.
I think the word was actually shimmer makeup.
True.
Shimmer makeup.
And I believe the website said something like, if a male is required by the court, we can put some hair gel in his hair.
Oh, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. It's become just this whole lifestyle. You could have an enchanted hamper to put your princess clothing in. And if you never grow out of this, there's a woman who makes engagement rings inspired by Disney princesses.
And I think that I have even seen Disney princess inspired wedding gowns as well, Molly.
I know. It really is a whole lifestyle. But then when something becomes a whole lifestyle, you've got parents rushing in and saying, is this the right lifestyle for my daughter? Should she be dressing like a princess? Are these princesses even good role models? Because if you reduce them down, I guess, to simple plot points, then you basically have a lot of girls who just want to get married and give up their dreams of anything but marriage.
And when you think about the core Disney princess movies, such as Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and The Little Mermaid, they all have these common elements of a girl who basically falls in love with someone and then she needs to be rescued by him to therefore validate her like royal line.
Exactly. And I think probably the one that gets the most flack would be Ariel from The Little Mermaid, mm-hmm. because she gives up her voice.
Yes.
Like, is there anything that like a good feminist mom would hate more than a woman who gives up her voice to attract a man?
Right. Because all Eric needs is just her beauty to mm-hmm. be charmed by her. He doesn't even need to hear a word she has to say.
And the same thing happens to Belle with that Gaston. He walks around, he's like, she's the most beautiful, so she's the best.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to care that she also reads books.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you go into Aladdin, I remember noticing this as, I can't remember how old I was when Aladdin came out, but I was young enough to watch it and be entertained. But I do remember when I first saw it, thinking how tiny Jasmine's waist was.
Oh yeah, she is a small girl.
Teensy.
Let's go ahead and talk about body image, because that's one thing that a lot of people point out about the princesses, is that they're all very tiny. And going back to Little Mermaid, who does she have against her but this giant Ursula?
Yeah, she's an octopus. She's basically just an overweight, kind of nasty looking woman.
So in simplified Disney terms, people are worried that the message that is sent is that thin and beautiful equals good,
mm-hmm.
and big and ugly equals bad, until they're redeemed by a princess like Beast, for example.
Of course.
So there is one study that just came out, I think very timely for the Tiana movie, about whether Disney princesses can make young girls over-obsessed with thinness.
And this was sort of a landmark study because there have been plenty of studies that have confirmed that media does impact body image dissatisfaction in girls who are 7 and older. But what this study really tried to do was look at how it impacted girls 6 and younger.
Mm-hmm. So these researchers brought in 121 girls aged 3 to 6 and showed them video clips. Now, half the girls would watch clips with princesses, and the other half would watch non-princess cartoons like Dora, Clifford, and Dragon Tales. And so then after they watched these clips, they just went into a room and played, and they were trying to see if the girls who watched the princess clips would play dress up more, if they would look in the vanity mirrors more, if they'd be more obsessed with dressing up, I guess. And then they would ask them about who they thought an ideal princess was.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the pictures were of, you know, very thin girls in ballerina costumes, and then some were heavier girls in ballerina costumes. And then they also asked them about their own body image. So now we'll go through the results.
Yeah, so the results showed that of the participants, 31% said that they always worry about being fat, and another 18% sometimes worried about it.
And that's unreal, because these are girls 3 to 6 years old.
3 to 6.
So is it the Disney movies?
Well, let's keep going, though. 1/3 of the girls desired a thinner ideal figure compared to their current size. And when asked to pick the real princesses, half the girls chose the thinnest model.
But here's the thing. You can feel good about taking a girl to see young, thin Princess Tiana, because the measures weren't affected by the princess videos. The girls who watched the princess clips did not pick a thin princess any more than the girls who watched the Dora clips.
Yeah, the researchers suspect that it might have something to do not so much with the kind of movies or television that these girls were watching, but rather the kind of messages that their parents might have been reinforcing. For instance, if their mom, you know, or dad had been constantly complaining about their weight, or and I think we should also point out that a number of these girls also were overweight, and so they might have been also receiving messages from teachers and parents that they need to drop some pounds as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's not so much in this age group what these girls watch. It's not Disney that makes them upset. They think that it's still sort of, you know, I don't want to use the word healthy, I guess, but still a good way to play, in that they see a princess, they become that character themselves, and they don't feel disqualified from playing princess because they are heavier.
Mm-hmm.
That it's more the messages they get at home. But just because, but this study's pretty new. Maybe people are still digesting it. Because there are plenty of parents who still want to blame Disney for all the things that girls take on about themselves.
Yeah, there was one article in the New York Times by Peggy Orenstein, and she cannot stand this princess obsession. She thinks that this whole idea, it just promotes this idea of women as just passive objects in need of a man to save them, and also communicating this message that in order to be desired, you must be a thin, attractive, you know, ideal beauty, instead of promoting, you know, the idea of a girl being strong and smart and able to stand on her own 2 feet.
And to take the example of Mulan, who people often point out goes off and is a warrior taking on a man's role, that's the one who often isn't pictured. And if she is pictured, she's pictured in her female clothes, which she didn't even like in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's saying that it's reinforcing gender roles, to put it so simply, is that you see Cinderella doing housework until a prince rescues her. I mean,
yeah.
Really, she's probably going to be doing, she would have been doing more housework after she'd gotten married if she hadn't married the prince.
Well, and also this, all of this kind of goes back to the very first podcast, Molly, that we did on why do boys wear pink and girls wear blue. And it's basically, I think that one of the reasons why Orenstein has such a big problem with this is, like you said, it's just this kind of socialized way to reinforce a child's gender.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, I think, what is it, like age like 5 or 6, like studies have shown that kids don't necessarily assign themselves to a gender. And they think that it's really because of, you know, societal influences such as, you know, buying a truck for a boy and a doll for a girl, that starts to build these ideas in the young kids' minds of like who they are.
Mm-hmm.
as boys or girls.
So Orenstein also has to devote some time in her essay to just stressing that if she doesn't buy, you know, a kid a Cinderella balloon, is she somehow showing this girl that it's bad to be a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Because if this is sort of the epitome of young girliness, if you deny the kid that, then do you deny them their gender? It gets very, it seems like being a parent is just a constant mind scramble.
Well, especially, you know, because you want to, I can understand, you know, her concern, because if you, you know, if you have a little girl, you want to make sure that you raise her to be a be a strong, smart young woman. But I thought that she made an interesting point in this article. She talked to a historian at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he said that historically, these kind of princess craze emerges during periods of uncertainty and profound social change. And he uses the example of The Little Princess, the book that was published and was then made into a film starring Shirley Temple. And he said it was published at a time of rapid urbanization, immigration, and poverty, and that the movie, the Shirley Temple movie, was a huge hit during the Great Depression. And it was kind of this sort of, I guess, escapist sort of folktale that young girls could really identify with. And it also gave them a chance to play savior during times of economic crisis and stability.
Mm-hmm. And so then they're saying that now that we are also again in uncertain times, that might be why the Disney princesses are so popular.
Yeah.
But then Ornstein gets worried that if in this time of uncertainty, playing princess and having this escapism eventually damages a girl because they think they have to be everything. They have to be so attractive and in a beautiful dress and also make good grades and save the prince when he falls off the ship. So it's, she worries about stress she might be putting on her children later on. And also, I guess what Disney is trying to do now is to, you would segue from princesses when you're very young to fairies,
yes,
which have more sass and attitude. Because originally Tinkerbell from Peter Pan was going to be a Disney princess. And they're like, oh, she's not really a princess. We're going to make her into a fairy. And so now the Disney fairies are like the next big thing.
But the thing, Molly, that I keep coming back to when I'm reading all of this critique of, you know, these princess stories and princess gear and are girls too obsessed with the color pink and all of this, is I can't get over the fact that it, at the end of the day, it's 25,000 merchandise items for sale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the whole fairy thing isn't necessarily, you know, they aren't trying to make girls like fairies. They just want you to buy the stuff. That's,
yeah,
all that matters. They just want me to go in and see the Snow White dress that I know will look adorable on my niece so I can take a picture of her and say how cute she is. You know, so I'm wondering if we're really just overanalyzing, really overly scrutinizing just junk, merchandising,
yeah,
junk.
And I guess that, you know, if you are a parent and you're spending that much money on these outfits and all the accessories that go with them, that maybe that's when you start to criticize the, what the girls might stand for.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Ariel, who does give up, you know, a large part of her identity. But, you know, you can find so many of these articles now that will go back and forth on whether these girls are good role models or not. We found one article that was by Rebecca Ann C. Do Rosario, and the article was published in Women's Studies in Communication. And what I really took away from this article was more about how women can just put each other down.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the damage that's done to these young princesses are by other women.
Yeah, she kind of points out that specifically in like Snow White and Sleeping Beauty, you have like distinct ages of women that it focuses on. You have like the young beauty,
mm-hmm,
and then you have kind of the evil stepmother who is in, you know, kind of crested over her prime and is, you know, is jealous of her, you know, youth. And then you have the older fairies,
mm-hmm,
who help out, like the fairy godmothers who will help out.
And that it is these socially constructed relationships with fairies that are beneficial to women. Like, these princesses never have mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to find their own families that can help them. And in some ways, that's kind of a positive thing to put out there for girls.
Yeah.
And she goes on to say that it's not like these princesses are really enslaved by a patriarchy necessarily, because it's not like their fathers, the kings, wander around going, man, I wish I had a son. It's more that they do have the power to lead their kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it is by getting married, but, you know, most parents want their kids to get married. I mean, that's what Peggy Ornstein says. You know, even though I don't want her to feel like she's a princess all her life, I still want her to get married and have children.
Sure. And then I thought there was another interesting analysis of whether or not these females, like comparing the decision-making process of males and females in these Disney princess movies. And this was a paper put out by a pair of researchers at Pacific Lutheran University. And they said, and this is a quote from the study, said when the female characters are portrayed initially as desirable, powerful, autonomous, in control, and independent, they make decisions that are often evaluated in the film as a failure, with the characters blaming themselves for the negative consequence. For instance, we keep going back to Little Mermaid, but it's an easy example. You know, she makes this decision to, she makes this pact with Ursula, loses her voice, and then Ursula almost kills, you know, her father and the prince, and the whole underworld kingdom almost goes down.
Yeah, I mean, you can keep going back and forth on whether they're good role models or bad role models. That one says their decision is frowned upon, whereas in the previous study we just cited, you know, she says that's kind of a revolutionary thing to do, to get out of your father's grip and to see what else is out there, you know, to get away from this kingdom that you don't want a part in. So basically, I don't think there's any way to win where these Disney princesses are concerned. And Kristen and I were left feeling kind of, you know, ambivalent about the whole brouhaha around them.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, and I don't know if this is an exact memory, because you know sometimes you have like those childhood memories that might not have really been right on. But from what I remember in kindergarten, when I would have like, say for after school, and every single day from what I can remember, we would watch Cinderella. You know, so I grew up, you know, as a very young child having seen Cinderella, you know, like 30, 40 times. You know, I watched, I can sing many of the songs by heart to The Little Mermaid. And
we've been singing songs all morning.
And of course, you know, we all saw Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty kind of freaked me out, so I didn't watch it.
Oh, I loved that one. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
I just loved it when the fairies made her the cake and the dress.
Oh, that was a good part. But anyway, but my point is, you know, like, you and I are now sitting here talking about it from this perspective, and we seem to have turned out okay, you know, into pretty smart, independent thinking woman, not to toot our own horns. But I mean, it kind of makes me wonder again, like, are we really like putting too much stock into the impact of these movies on young girls?
Yeah, but we weren't subject to the Disney princess marketing.
That's very true.
So I don't know. Again, I think it just goes back to the marketing, not necessarily the content of the actual films. Because then if you look at the actual films, most of them are based on fairy tales and folk tales, which is probably their own podcast in terms of how they treat women. But I mean, I just don't, it's hard for me to look at a thing. We found this thing on a sociological images blog that reduced Belle to someone who saves the princess life with her only asset, her sexuality. I mean, it's just not what I got from Beauty and the Beast.
Well, but all of them, though, I think there is something to say that they all have in common the fact that they are very attractive women who, you know, are basically cherished mostly for their beauty.
True.
So that might not be the best message to be sending. But my niece does look cute in those dresses.
So we want to hear from you guys, like Disney princesses, good or evil.
Yeah, what do you think?
Who's your favorite one?
Yeah, and what do you think about Tiana? Let us know your thoughts.
And you can do that by emailing us at momstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yes. And do we have some listener mail, Molly?
We have one.
Okay.
We'll do just one because we've already kind of rambled on about various thoughts on Disney princesses. This is a comment from Katie on the Vampire podcast, and she wanted to kind of stick up for Bella, who we dissed a little bit. And she says the difference comes down to the books versus the movies. So here are her points for how the books show that Bella is, in fact, a strong character. Bella, the books allude to the fact that Bella is more of an adult than her mother and takes care of her family in Arizona, meaning she's mature. She leaves everything behind to move in with her father, who she hadn't seen in years, in order to make her mother happy, meaning she's self-sacrificing. She goes above and beyond to encourage Angela and give her the confidence she needs to ask out a boy, and she does the same with Jessica and Mike. She's not looking for a boyfriend and turns down several boys' dates offers. She's happy with the life she has, and it is Edward who seeks her out, which means she's fulfilled already without a boy in her life. She takes over all the responsibilities of running a household when she moves in with her father. In the book, she does all the cooking, etc., meaning she's a caregiver. She's brave despite her own fears. She uses the fact that Edward can't read her thoughts to hide her fear and tell him that she's not afraid of him. She puts herself in possible danger to gain the trust and friendship of another. She's a good listener. She's humble. She's non-judgmental. And Katie feels that the movies don't do a good job of showing most of these, as it cuts out all the secondary relationships and pretty much everything not pertaining to advancing the plot between girl and vampire. I'll admit, when I saw the movie, I was kind of upset at how much they cut out. So she recommends to anybody to read the books before watching any of the movies.
All right. Well, thanks for writing in. And of course, if you have any questions or comments you'd like to send our way, you can email us at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And we also have a blog called How To Stuff. It is at howstuffworks.com. And finally, for a riveting article, How the Disney Princesses Work, you can go to howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.